Nisambulavinaka Pacific Wave listeners, Koroy Hawkins here. Because of COVID-19 lockdown here in New Zealand, we can't bring you our usual daily show, and we're really sorry about that. It stinks, and we'll be back in your feed as soon as we can, but while we can't make our usual shows, it doesn't mean we're not covering Pacific news. Each night, I talk about some of the day's stories with RNZ Night's host, Brian Crump. Here's one of our chats.
Koroy Hawkins from RNZ Pacific. You there, Koroy?
No, I'm here. Yep.
Bulla Koroy, how are you doing?
Good, man. I think the only thing I understood from that last convo was cloud.
Yeah, well, you know, yes, probably so. No, I think I did learn something. Okay. But whether I'll still know it tomorrow at this time, I can't guarantee that. But I'll tell you one thing that's been a bit complicated for us to follow, and which you guys at RNZ Pacific have been doing a great job, is the machinations of the Samoan Parliament and Samoan politics in general. And it looks to me like we finally have a date for the new set of MPs post-election to meet and debate later this month.
Yeah, September 14th. That's a long time since April. And half the parliament hasn't been sworn in yet, which is quite interesting because of all of the kerfuffle. Only the fast MPs in the current government had that swearing in the lawns in front of parliament because it was locked, and they've been recognized. So the opposition, the former ruling HRPP members, have yet to be sworn in, and their status is kind of in limbo, which is an interesting thing going into it. But the Prime Minister Fiamme Naomi Mataafa announced on Wednesday that the budget for the next financial year, which is the big thing, will be tabled at the sitting, and that's coming together now. The leader of the HRPP, former Prime Minister Toilaipa Sailele Malilengoi, has written to the Speaker saying that all of the HRPP elected members want to be sworn in by the head of state. But Fiamme has said that the Speaker is the person that's under Samoan law supposed to be carrying out swearing in. So she says this just shows that Toilaipa continues to reject the Court of Appeal ruling in July, which declared her party the legitimate government and the swearing in ceremony under the tent as lawful. So still quite complex going into this one.
However, members of the former government, MPs from the former government, the Human Rights Protection Party, are going to go to Parliament. They are going to sit. And I assume that is in its own way an acceptance that things have moved on and they are now the opposition.
Yeah, hopefully. They haven't got letters, though, which is another thing. The letters have only been sent to the sworn-in members, so it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. On top of this, also something that's sort of keeping an eye on is all of the election petitions that are bubbling away in the background, probably nearing completion now. So there have been quite a few losses on the HRPP side. There's also been a lot of people that have agreed to step down and force by-elections, which has been quite interesting. So there's a few by-elections in the making coming out, so it'll be interesting to see where the numbers are in a couple of months' time.
Well, there's enough to potentially change who has the majority in the House and therefore who is the government or which party forms the government?
They'd have to win quite a lot of them to make a good push at it. I wouldn't rule it out, but I'd say it's an outside chance at this point.
How has the Samoan civil service, and maybe Samoans in general, how have they coped with this situation of limbo? Because it seems to me, from the distance of several thousand kilometres, that they have, rather.
Yeah, it's been admirable. Like, as I was saying to my colleagues from Samoa here, if it was in Melanesia, you'd probably see a few things burning in the streets. But they've done it all by the book and have the patience and the fortitude to follow and allow the rule of law to dictate what happens and allow the judiciary to function has been really, really admirable in this. And I think across the region there's admiration for Fiamme and her side and the Samoan judiciary for maintaining its independence and integrity and coming out with a result that sort of respects the rule of law and upholds that democracy in Samoa.
Just remind me, if you can, of how long the Human Rights Protection Party was in power.
40 years, I believe. Right. I think more than 20 with Toilaipa at the helm.
Time for a COVID-19 question. Papua New Guinea, We haven't asked you about Papua New Guinea and COVID-19 for a few days.
Yeah, they're really concerned about the Western province, which is the border province with Indonesia, where there's Delta popping up. They had a few cases initially early last month, and now there's about 30 that they're really concerned about. It's quite tough because they're trying to stop people from crossing the border, which, as we've talked about before, Johnny and I had been up to. But there's a lot of trade, and there's a lot of cultural connections with communities either side of the border, so it's quite difficult to try and stop people from going across. As you're probably aware, in terms even just economically, things are a lot cheaper in Indonesia than they are in Papua New Guinea. So there's a lot of trading going on in terms of going over and getting goods and coming back over and selling them in Papua New Guinea as well. So there's all of that. About 18,000 COVID cases in Papua New Guinea, nearly 200 deaths to date. But again, figures are much lower than what the reality is, because they've stopped testing. The testing was not as up to speed to begin with, and they've actually slowed it down and focused more on vaccinations. So yeah, quite a worrying situation there. And Papua is actually on the Indonesian side is one of the provinces with still quite a few surges, with over I think 63,000 cases in Papua and nearly 1,500 deaths. So it's right on the border there with Papua New Guinea, which is quite a worry. And they've done some testing on the cases in Western Province, and there is some genetic linkage between the Delta cases in Papua New Guinea and Indonesia.
Heading further east, Fiji. What's the situation in Fiji today?
Yeah, still not good. 8 more people have died from COVID in Fiji, taking the death toll past 500 for the first time. 17,124 active cases. With the numbers we were talking about not being indicative, the rolling death toll is like the average daily death toll is the worrying thing. That's still up there in terms of how many people are dying every day. Good news. A bit of good news on the vaccination side. As of 31st August, they've had over 560,000 Fijians who've had their first dose of the vaccine. They've just started their vaccinations in Rotuma, which is like a really remote northern island up there in Fiji, and over 200,000 getting both jabs. So the percentage is 95.9% of the target population with at least one dose, and 47.6% now fully vaccinated. So hopefully those figures start to make some sort of impact on their situation.
And further east, still to French Polynesia.
Yeah, they've had some respite. We were talking about early in the week them calling for help, and they're welcoming an additional 100 doctors and nurses from France on Friday to help with the care of COVID-19 patients. So more than 400 people with the virus in the territory's hospitals, which are really, really overrun at the moment. So this is a welcome thing. They requested 200, so it's still half of what they've asked for, but still it is help. And this has come because early in the year, in July, the French President Emmanuel Macron stood in the Tahiti hospital and said that they would help protect Polynesians. So the hospital made a direct appeal to him based on that promise. So that's quite interesting. France has also been deploying hundreds of medical staff to its departments in the Caribbean as well, so it's sort of in line with everything that's happening there. There's been some stress over Tahiti's new laws around vaccination, so they've made sure that anyone with dealing with the public or vulnerable individuals has to be inoculated within 2 months, or they're going to be fined over $1,700 and have the suspension of their work contract. So there's a few court cases challenges to that being made at the moment. About half of the French Polynesian population has had one jab, and there's actually been some calls from the opposition for the French Polynesian government to follow New Zealand and New Caledonia's approach in closing the border. As you know, French Polynesia had opened their borders in July last year for tourism, one of the only destinations in the region you can even travel to if you have the money.
Yes, the difference between French Polynesia and New Zealand is New Zealand closed the border down again after, or shut lockdown things after one case. of the Delta variant been in the community. There were more, but that was all it took. But
yep.
It's not the same situation of French Polynesia, is it?
No. They've continued. Their government has prioritised the economy and the tourism lifeline for them, for the economy.
Now, finally, a story from a few weeks back, the Tongan coach and former Wallaby star, Tōtai Kefu, was badly injured in a robbery. People tried to break into his house, and he ended up being hurt, I guess, after confronting them. And he's still recovering, isn't he?
Yeah, so he's back at home now. I've just spoken to our sports reporter who's been in touch and covering this story. They're back at home now. His wife's still undergoing rehab. She had quite a deep cut on her arm. And obviously quite still, all the family still shook up. And it's sort of coming... The reason this has made the news is because it's likely that he's going to not make it for the end of season tour for the team, to stay home and look after his family. So Tonga's looking to play in Europe. They've got a northern tour that's supposed to kick off against Scotland at Murrayfield on the 30th of November, but there Scotland's also having some issues there with COVID, so that's sort of up in the air. And they're also, Tonga's scheduled to play England at Twickenham, as well as the French Barbarians in Romania. So all of that busy sort of end of year schedule is sort of what he's likely to miss out, as he focuses on supporting his wife and being just close to his family coming out of this horrible, horrible incident.
Karoi, it's lovely to talk with you. We'll speak again tomorrow.
Thanks, Brian.
It's Karoi Hawkins from RNZ Pacific, back with another Pacific Chat at around about 8:15 tomorrow.
That's our Pacific Waves chat with Knights host Brian Crump for today. We'll be back to normal programming as soon as New Zealand comes out of lockdown. Remember, you can listen to us free on Apple, Spotify, iHeart, or any podcast platform. And if you're using Apple, please leave us a rating so others can also find us. Ka kite anō.